Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the way it is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. Yeah, I've never been asked to do a whole file.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So we're down to just two county finals this weekend, the Cork football and the Tipperary hurling replay. I thought the Kerry football one was on this weekend, but I got that wrong. That's not on till next weekend. So Clonakilty versus St Finbarr's in Páirc Uí Chaoimh at 3 o'clock. It's a repeat of the 2009 final, which Clonakilty won by a point. I don't know much about Clonakilty at all, if I'm being honest. It's not a name that jumps out at me when it comes to Cork, you know, senior football. They've won 9 county titles. St Finbarr's, which is a very, very famous Cork football and hurling club, they've won 9 county titles. Like, I mean, you know, they're on level footing. Clonakilty beat them the last time they played in 2009. The difference is St Finbarr's have 3 All-Ireland club titles in football. They've won 9 Cork titles. I know I've said this on the show before, Niall, because I just rave about this. They've won 9, one-third of their county finals resulted in Munster and All-Ireland club titles, which is pretty phenomenal. And then they've 2 All-Ireland senior club hurling titles as well, 75-78 in the hurling and 80-81 and 87 in the football. That's beyond belief.
Yeah, it's some strike rate to have, isn't it? Like, in the tradition of that club, like, you always think of Jimmy Barry Murphy anytime you hear it, St Finbarr's.
Yeah.
It just seemed like throughout the kind of 60s, 70s, 80s, they went on sort of a blaze of glory, like, and the win in the Cork and going on to win the All-Ireland. It's sort of iconic, isn't it, the Finbarr's club?
That's exactly it. And they have Mike O'Neill. Well, Clonakilty have Mike O'Neill. He was manager of Clonakilty in 2009, Lee, when they won the county title. So they're like, what did we do well back then? Let's get him back. I think we've talked a bit about managers. I think it was the Ballyhea manager. They got him back, you know, that did so well. Interestingly, St Finbarr's won the group game. We saw this with Belmullet and Knockmore. It flipped for the county final. So Barrs won the group game 112-15. But presumably you can just tear that up for county final time.
Yeah, well, I was reading that Clonakilty, they'd only lost 2 games all season, and both times was to St Finbarr's. First time was in the league decider, and then the second time was the one you just mentioned in the group stage of the championship.
Right.
So, like, you know, they'll be hungry for revenge, but I mean, it is... Yeah, like the other team too will have a bit of confidence going in, knowing full well that they can actually beat them. The other thing is that Clonakilty, you know, they'll be missing Liam O'Donovan. So he played for Cork 2019, 2020, or halfway through the 2020 season, and then he tore his cruciate ligament. He's a really fast, like, attack-minded halfback.
Yeah.
Tore his cruciate, came back this season, played the last 3 matches there, looked like he was getting a good run of form going, and then in extra time there in the semi-final, he tore his hamstring and had to get surgery for it. So he'll be missing the final as well. And he's a young lad just tormented with injuries at the minute. So that'll be a big miss for them as well, and only good news for Finbarr.
Yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but you don't suppose you remember the scoreline from that league final?
I don't know. I haven't. Oh, no, I don't. But I remember them saying that it was, they were being criticised for being too defensive, and the manager was dead against that accusation, and that he said that they went for it. But I think it was a high enough scoring game. Why do you ask?
No, well, I mean, obviously, St Finbarr's won the group game pretty easily, and I was wondering if they won the league game pretty easily. That would be a little bit more evidence for anybody maybe who's looking to put a bit of a wager on it maybe or something this weekend. The big one in Tipperary, obviously, is Loughmore Castellani and Thurles Sarsfields. 3:15. This is on television. Advantage Loughmore, you would say, or is advantage Thurles, who've had a 2-week break, or is advantage Loughmore, who pretty much were the better team for a lot of that final, have won a football one in between. The momentum maybe is all with them. Tired bodies and all that kind of thing as well. It's hard to know, Niall. This is all hindsight stuff. Loughmore win it, odd or flying it every weekend. Thurles win it. Jeez, that rested him the world of good.
I suppose, yeah, it's hard to say. I'd say it comes down to like how they, look, I'd say they were, as we were talking about how they would celebrate that football win, I'd say they were straight back into it on Tuesday night, and they're in that kind of routine now. It's 17 weeks in a row. I was looking back on it to see, like, was there many replays in the Tipperary Hurling final before? And Loughmore will be glad to know that the last time there was, in 2002, it was Mulnahone beat Thurles Sarsfield. So Thurles lost the last replay. And Loughmore, they've only actually won 3 Tipperary Senior Hurling Championships, but one that they did win in 1988 came after a replay. So maybe the omens are good there for Loughmore.
Maybe, yeah, the manager will be that. The big issue for Loughmore, obviously, is playing every weekend is injuries. If you've got an injury, you're in trouble. And obviously, John Maher missed the football final. And it was Brian McGrown, he came on late in the football final. You'd imagine he's grand now. He's come on late. He's got the legs run out. But John Maher had a hamstring tweak. Now, with a tweak, he will be back in 2 weeks. You know, if it's just a tightening up. And they were right not to play him last weekend. But a big, like, I mean, that's just a huge either gain or loss.
Yeah, you'd imagine Brian McGrath will be all right, because he played the week before against Thurles. And, like, he's had that thumb injury. It's been at him for a long time. And he was interviewed after the football final, and he just said, like, forget about the thumb. If they want me to play, I'll play. Like, so I'd say he'll be grand this weekend. John Maher, like, that kind of came as a surprise. That was just a kind of a late injury that made him miss the football final. And, like, he would be such a huge loss, because he's such a sort of a dominant player, like centre back there for Loughmore. He was in the Tipperary team as well, but he's a key man for them there, because very rarely does a ball really get past John Maher, like, and hamstring, like, it's always a dodgy one. Like, you can probably see him running out and giving it a go, but when a lad has a hamstring at them, it's never 100%, like.
I know, it is. It's difficult. We saw that with Owen O'Donnell at intercounty level. He probably regretted going out to the Leinster final. You want to play. One type of injury that you don't mess with is a hamstring injury. It's not like you can run it off or you can do anything. It just comes back at you if you don't give it enough time. But I have tweaked mine before, and I've been okay in 2 weeks. So, it is possible. Again, I always say this on the show, the big test the day after you hurt your hamstring is, can you walk on it without a limp? If you can walk on it without a limp, you have a chance in 2 weeks. If you have a limp, forget about it. You're a month and that's it. And trust me, this is better than any medical advice you get off any physio. Trust the limp the following day on the hamstring. Matches on television, RT have Clock Ballacolla and Rapparees. This is in Port Laois on Saturday night. Lee, Rapparees played the county final on the 19th of September. Now, this is a huge disadvantage to Rapparees and a huge advantage to Clock Ballacolla. Clock Ballacolla are at home in Amore Park. Laois clubs generally don't do that well in Leinster, but I'm banking on Clock Ballacolla, the momentum, the home advantage, and Rapparees. Jesus, they're 2 months sitting around waiting for this match.
Yeah, nearly longer than 2 months at this stage. Look, we talk a little about the disadvantages of playing week in, week out, and the difficulties of that, and how a week's break can, you know, probably do everyone the world of good. But 2 months, that's a long time. You nearly feel like you're starting a brand new season again. And you're wondering how they tailor their preparations again, you know, periodization-wise in terms of their training. Do you taper it right back, you know, start off really late, work in some hard fitness stuff and try to peak yourself again later on, you know, knowing full well that this game's in the horizon, and you're going to be going up against a team that's got real momentum. You know, they're match sharp. They've got the, they just, I know, not long after their county finals, like it's, it is a big disadvantage, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was to their detriment in the end.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, think about it. You just won a county title, and for the next month, they'll pretty much be going back into pre-season training. Just to, cause where are you going to get challenge matches? Every other hurling team in Wexford's out. Like, I mean, you know, you have to be trying to find them, and you're at county final stage. Other counties might not want the challenge games. It's a terrible situation that they've been landed in. You're right, it's 9 weeks. How the hell would you even, you know, get over that 9 weeks?
Yeah, it's an awkward sort of a setup for them. And I'd say, surely after winning the county final, like, they would have known, like, that they're not going to be playing for a long time. So I'd say they surely took a week or two at least, took it off and kind of, you know, just try to give themselves a break, enjoy the county final. And yeah, like, it would be, you'd be coming back in and it's kind of a pre-season thing. You're nearly getting fit again. And
how depressing would that be? Like, I mean, yeah. You go from winning a county title at Clonbellacolla and now they're into another competition. Still that fitness carries over, still, you know, the sharpness, all those things, and you're looking forward to it. Where the Rapparees are like, they win a county final and are back doing feckin' long distance runs.
Yeah, it's not ideal for them, in fairness. And like, as Lee said, like, Clonbellacolla, they're coming in with huge momentum, like having won two county championships in basically the last 3 months. Like, and I was talking to Declan Laffin yesterday, and he was, they haven't lost a game, Clonbellacolla, since he came in as manager. They drew the first one against Rathdowney Earl, but ever since they've been winning. And you know, that sort of momentum will do them the world of good heading in here. Like, the Wexford champions, they'll probably be favourites, like, because Rapparees, they're a very good team, and they hammered St Anne's in that Wexford county final. Yeah. Like, we've seen how good they were. The full forward line, it was Lenny Connolly,
yeah.
they ran amok completely, like, so. I'm looking forward to that game, like, because it's not too often you see Laois and Wexford champions, like, on television, you know, in a Leinster provincial clash. So looking forward to that one.
Yeah, most Portlaoise fans will remember 1988 when Ratneuer from Wexford beat Portlaoise in very last puck of the game. Portlaoise just scored a screamer point. If anyone listened to Pat Critchley's tribute show on the show here earlier on this year, the Portlaoise got a great score from John Taylor to go 2 points up. Thought the referee would blow it up with the Ratneuer puck out, but of course didn't. And Ratneuer went down, scored a goal to win the Leinster final. And Portlaoise were already after winning, or Portlaoise won the football the week after, or had already won it. That would have been the Leinster double for Portlaoise. So listen, when you talk about Wexford clubs and Laois clubs, Niall, there's plenty of history there.
Was there many dual players back then, Willie, or would you?
There was. You know? Portlaoise would have had 5, 6 at least, 7 maybe even dual players on that team. Yeah, so it was the 1980s were a golden period for Portlaoise in football and hurling. I think they won 6 football, 6 hurling county titles. Would have won an All-Ireland club football, 3 Leinsters in All-Ireland club, and were beaten in that Leinster final in hurling. So, like, I mean, it was fantastic. It was a great time to be alive, and I don't remember any of it really, although I was at that Ratneuer game. I do remember that goal going in. I think that was in Dr. Cullen Park. What age would I have been? 10. So those little memories are definitely there. Padraic Pearse's versus Mount Bellew My Lock. This is off because of COVID. I don't want to say too much about this and start giving out. I don't know. Like, I mean, this, it's like, we don't know much about how many players have it, or, you know, who's sick. I don't know. My thoughts on this, Lee, and listen, everybody has different thoughts on this, obviously, are if these games are getting called off, we've 93% vaccination take up. If these games now are still getting called off, are games going to get called off forever? We know COVID's going nowhere. You know, like, I mean, if some of the Padraic Pearses or Mount Bellew My Lock players are sick, they can't play the game. If their players are not sick, they play the game. That's the way it's always been in the history of illnesses and GEA. And if these games are getting called off now with all this huge vaccine take up, what's to say in 3 years' time games still aren't getting called off? Like, there's no end to this. This is why I'm wondering, can, like, these games just not be played?
Yeah, I'm wondering too if my own county maybe is on the blame for this. Tyrone maybe set that precedent for extending fixtures and stuff because of COVID outbreaks. But in this case, I definitely think it harms Padraic Pearses more because they're in a bit of a similar situation. They played their final over 4 weeks ago, I think. So they've got that longer layoff. This will lead it up to 5 weeks. Mount Bellew My Lock, they played last week. You think they actually got a win over the Leitrim champions.
Ballinamore, you know,
so yeah. Yeah, so the momentum's with them, and then a 1 week break in between that'll probably suit them better. I don't know the difference between like who has the COVID cases.
No,
or which club.
We don't know. It definitely suits Mount Bellew, my luck. I'm not making any accusations.
That's all. Factually, it suits them better, and that's all we'll say on the matter.
Yeah, no, but that's it. Like, I mean, there's not much more that we can say about that. I just find it disappointing. We don't know who the outbreak is with. I just see no end to this if we can't just get on with it. You know, like, I mean, and even with the Tyrone situation, the vaccination programme wasn't at the stage, you know, that it's at now, and we're not going to get any more to take it. That's it, 93. It's a phenomenal number. I don't know. Just for me, lads, we need to start moving on now at this stage. Like, I mean, and just play these games and stop calling them off and treat it like if you're sick, don't play. You're not healthy enough to play. And if you're not sick, work away. The other game is Ballyea versus Ballygunner. I think this one will probably be put on television because this is the earlier game. This at a half one or something.
One, yeah.
So you'd imagine TG Cahir will head down to, it's in Cusack Park. It's in Clare. Last time these played, it went extra time. It was in Walsh Park. I remember it. It was a Philip Matany goal late.
It was a cracker of a game that day. I think the final score after extra time was 226-223. Like, so they went all the way, and I think, yeah, Ballyea, they were kind of on course for victory that day. And Philip Mahoney, there was a ball came across the square, and there was loads of Ballygunner lads pushed up, and he volleyed on it in, like, and it was a brilliant goal and a brilliant way to save that game for them. Like, but
and Ballygunner were strong favourites, like they will be this weekend. They were strong favourites. That was going to be a big shock
for sure. Yeah, like, and Ballyea, in fairness, like, when they're missing Tony Kelly this weekend, that's obviously going to take away from them a small bit. But like, it was a wet day the last day. I'll never forget that game down in Walsh Park. Like, it was such a brilliant game. But Niall Deasy scored 2-10 that day, and he scored 2-6 from play. Like, so he gave them a lot of trouble the last day. I think it wasn't Tony Kelly's best game. I think he scored 3 points. Like, so, like, Ballyea, as we've seen when they won the Clare Championship, they still have a bit of strength and depth beyond Tony Kelly. But like, Ballygunner, they were so good in that Waterford final. They scored goals for fun, and
yeah,
Desi Hutchinson's on fire now. Like, you'd have to fancy them, in fairness, but I wouldn't write off Ballyea.
Ballygunner, Ballyhale, All-Ireland final, or maybe they meet before that. I'm not sure how the semi-finals work out. Conor Turbitt has been talking about playing in the Ulster Club Championship. They obviously won their first county title in 58 years. And generally, I always remember Portlaoise won it in 1999. We hadn't won it since 91. A big famine in Portlaoise, you know, after that 80s success. Where I remember us talking about winning the county title. And then it was Leinster Club, and it wasn't a huge amount of focus on it, you know. Whereas when we won the second and third one, we really were honed in on this Leinster Club. It was a huge target of ours that we wanted to, you know, do well and win it. So it's forgivable enough when a team that wins the first county title in 58 years, you know, isn't altogether obsessed about the Ulster Club. You know, they're kind of happy with what they've done. But he's talking about, Conor Turbitt's talking about, I think this group of players are lucky in that we've played provincial championships coming through. We've played under 16 and under 21 Ulster tournaments, and that experience helps. So there's a know-how in terms of what it's like. And it just got me thinking, Lee, like, I mean, the Ulster clubs are very lucky. At underage level, there's under 16, under 18, under 20 Ulster club competitions. And I don't know, just as young players, immediately they get that kind of focus that county title isn't the end of the year. You know, if anyone has, and then there's a huge novelty of it as a young fella. Everybody remembers the Fela. Remember playing at the Fela. We won it the year I was under 14. We did a lot of good underage teams. Jesus, the novelty of playing the Down champions, you know, as an under 14. I think it's fantastic. I think it prepares the players for senior level because they're going to be playing in provincial club championships if they win a county title. Ulster are consistent on it. I know Leinster and Connacht did a provincial minor championship up until 2015, and now they don't do it anymore. I don't know. I think for under 16, under 18, under 20, it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I actually wasn't aware that, like in Leinster and whatever, it wasn't really.
Yeah, I don't. Munster don't do it at all.
Yeah, because it's a huge deal up here. My first ever article as a journalist for, in terms of GAA, was for the Gaelic Life in 2015, and I interviewed Conor Carville, who's now the Glen captain. And Glen had just won the under 21 that was then Ulster Championship, meaning that they had won four minors and an Ulster under 21. at Ulster level, sorry. So, and then the whole article was about them taking all that experience and all these youthful players and retaining them. And someday, you know, they'll make it into the senior and they'll finally topple the great Slap Neil team, because Glenn were actually an intermediate at that stage at senior level.
Right.
So, you know, it's fun that that's all come full circle now. But the point is, I even made that article in the first place, you know, because the exposure that that Ulster tournament had given them. You know, we'd heard about this Glen team years ago in Ulster. It sort of gives them the same sort of platform as, like, you know, schools cups like McCrory Cup and the Hogan Cup and stuff. You know, people get talking about them, you hear about name players. It prepares them, as you say already, like, in terms of knowing that the county final isn't actually the end of the year, it isn't the end of the season, there's more to come. And it prepares them to, you know, for playing on the big stage, you know, because what is underage football if it isn't preparing them for senior football at some stage? So they know that playing on the big stage and getting that preparation, and then they can bring that into the senior level. And, you know, like, it's worked a charm for them. They were able to use that to their advantage and bring it forward. So it's specific preparation for the specific environment that you're going to be in. Like, it only makes sense.
Yeah, Conor Glass mentioned it on the show last week when I was talking to him as well, as, you know, it wasn't very new to them, even though they'd never won a senior county title, never played the senior provincial club, but they'd all played in it at underage level. I think it's an advantage. Well, it's not really an advantage in Ulster because they've all played in it. I think it's great. Like, for example, until Naas got to the county final this year, we wouldn't have known about Naas having great underage crop coming up through. Whereas if Naas had won a minor Leinster, you would have, you know, you'd have your eye out for them or whatever. You know, I just think it's just an extra step that they could go to. And, you know, number one, prepare them for senior. But number two, more counties are aware potentially of, you know, what other how things are going on in other counties.
Yeah, like, I remember, like, chatting to lads from Ulster and lads from Gweedore back in the day, and they'd be saying they're going on to the Ulster Minor, Ulster 21 club competitions, and you'd be looking at them enviously. Like, it wouldn't have affected my club now. We didn't win too many county championships, like, but what a great competition it is, as Lee said, for the exposure for those players, like, and for lads like us to kind of hear about young players coming up, or they're ripping it up in the provincial club competition. And as well as that, it's a bit of preparation as well, getting the experience of leaving your own county, playing a club from another county as well, like. And it's just it's a great competition, a great novelty as well, to kind of, and I'd say everyone that, like, all them Glen boys, I'd say they really enjoyed that, and it would kind of whet the appetite for them now as they're looking forward to Ulster.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's something Leinster and Connacht might look back into. And I think Naas won the last one in 2015 in Leinster, and Munster definitely should start doing it. Ben O'Connor has been talking about Middleton. I like the cut of Ben O'Connor's jib. He doesn't hold back. Have to say, I've asked him on the show before, he read the text and never replied back to me, so I'm not going to hold that against him. It's not the first time that's ever happened. Generally, it doesn't happen. But he says we're going, like, he's just being honest here. Like, I mean, you know, the kind of thing, oh, we won the county title, the rest of it is a bonus, and, you know, we'll give it our best shot. We're going to have a right cut off Kilmallock in 3 weeks' time. Now, this is the same fella who says, if there's seven or eight better hurlers than Conor Lee Ham, we don't know anything about hurling, right? That's what he said after the county final. And now he's saying, we're going to have a right cut off Kilmallock in 3 weeks' time, and we're going out to win that Munster, and we're not hiding that. It's that brilliant, isn't it? I think, instead, like, some people might look at that and go, oh, geez, that's a bit cocky. If I was a player looking at Ben O'Connor saying that, that would give me fierce confidence, Niall, rather than the other way around. I think there's certain clubs and counties that have a rich history that bounce off that kind of confidence and want it. And that message is an important message for a club that might have, you know, like I say, aren't shrinking violets and have a good history that you should stand up and be proud of.
Definitely, yeah. And, like, I'd say that's exactly what Ben O'Connor is saying to the Middleton boys in the dressing room. And it's, like, it's so rare that you'd hear a manager, like, most managers, they go, like, oh, sure, it's going to be a tough challenge and stuff like this. And it's all kind of,
oh, we're not looking past Kilmallock now, because that's going to be a very, very difficult challenge. And, you know, Kilmallock, they've been there before, you know, they're a very good team. You know, we'll be up against it. Actually, they'd be going in as very strong favourites for this one, you know.
You have it down to a table. You well, could be a club manager.
I've listened to it enough times. Well, we're not looking, if you look too far ahead, that's when you get caught.
I'd say, though, as you said, if you were a Middleton player and you heard Ben O'Connor saying that, like, you would be a little bit inspired. Yeah. Like, you know, you'd be like, Ben O'Connor, he has this belief in us, and he believes that we're going to go on. And you know, he's not afraid of Kilmallock, and we're not going to be afraid of Kilmallock, and we're going to talk about it that way too. Like, and it's definitely. I remember Ben O'Connor had an interview last year, and he was saying that hurling has gone a bit like soccer, and he was saying that he was giving out about parents saying about poor Johnny getting a belt on the field and all this.
Like, oh, I love
it. He doesn't hold back in those interviews, no. And he's. If he does reply to your text, I'd be looking forward to that interview.
Well, I'm going to make an appeal to anyone from Cork. If you know Ben O'Connor, tell him to reply. But maybe he was busy, you know, maybe he just forgot, you know, but maybe just remind him because we want to talk to him. Colin Boyle retired. A few retirements, Lee, this weekend. A few interesting bits. Enda Varley was interviewed in The Independent about Colin Boyle. And I thought it was there was a few bits in it that was interesting. He played the 2006 All-Ireland final and Fintan Gould destroyed him. No shame there, because Fintan Gould was a monster of an underage player. Remember, he played midfield. He probably played wing forward on Colin Boyle. Colin Boyle was taken off at half time. And then he didn't get called into the senior panel until 2012. I think he got called in and didn't shake up the world alight. He was a forward when he was younger. That's another. Number one, I didn't know that he was taken off at half time in that 2006 final. Number two, I didn't know he was a forward when he was younger. And number three, which I was really shocked by, he was a skinny little fellow when he was younger. I thought this man is just he kind of looks like a farming brute of a build. This was all gym work. I thought that was he was just a natural stocky sort of fella.
Yeah, it's the real perfect sort of underdog story, you know, of the fella that never gave up and he had to really fight for like his recognition. I think it was like a 4-year hiatus before he could call back into the Mayo team. Yeah. And as you say, you know, he'd really obviously spent that time working really hard on himself, on his football and play, obviously, first of all, and then on his physique, getting really strong and much bigger to cope with the inter-county stage. And some players are late developers like that, so you can put it down to that too. But I mean, I'd say the very obvious attribute of Colm is that, you know, his work rate and even his bravery. Everyone talks about what a brave player he is, and that was just testament to even a couple of weeks ago when he was brave enough to ask Roy Keane for a selfie and it went viral on Twitter, and everyone was writing under it saying that it's the hardest man in Ireland and he's there with Roy Keane.
Jeez, how did I miss that? When did this happen?
That was a couple of weeks. I think it was the Manchester Derby. So he, of all days to do it to. And then that same day, Roy Keane, maybe the same day or the next week, Roy Keane, a video of him went, if I'm going mental at fans for asking him for selfies.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
He obviously knew better to go mental at Colm Boyle.
He's not to be messed with. Well, that's the thing. He liked to break lads up. This is why he's a fan's favourite. He loved the diving block. You know, he was a throwback and he was a hardy bit of stuff. And when you think that when he was brought in, it was John O'Matney gave him his chance as a cornerback, probably not a natural cornerback anyways. He's more of a halfback. He was dropped and he didn't get back in for 4 years. And then he ends up with four All-Stars. Some turnaround, isn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant. Like, and I used to love watching Colin Boyle play because it was just like...
Even hurling men would have liked him. He put his head in where you wouldn't put your foot.
That's a good one. He was so kind of like 100% every time. And when he went for a ball, like, you knew all about it, like, because he went in hard, and he was just like Keith Higgins, really, wasn't he? Like, he just kind of, he drove through everything, and he'd never take a step back, like. And yeah, as you said, I kind of thought he's so stocky, like, and it kind of looks like a lad that it's naturally kind of a stocky thing, but he obviously put a lot of work into his game. And like, I'd say that setback when he was younger, that drove him on, and like, you could see it on the field. He kind of played like he'd a point to prove the whole time. And like, when you think of Mayo, like, and Mayo's best players, like, Colin Boyle is the man that comes to mind. Like, so it's just such a tigerish defender. Like,
yeah, no, it definitely is. Enda Varley, if you don't believe me, Enda Varley said he wouldn't be naturally built. He just put in the time in terms of the gym and building himself up. Again, just to transform his body from being skinny into what he looks like now. Like, I mean, again, that's deserves a huge amount of credit. So yeah, most football people and hurling people would love Colin Boyle. Paul Broderick, Carlo, Corner forward, obviously an All-Star nomination in 2018. Fantastic corner forward. You know, all left foot on the frees. Leash played them a good few times recently, and he'd definitely be the one that you want to worry about. He had a brilliant performance against Kildare when they shocked them over in Tullamore. I think he scored 11 points that day, so he was fantastic. He's actually an interesting one. He's no spleen since he was 18, and he has a heart condition since birth. So, like, I mean, there was a lot of talk with Paul Broderick around the COVID thing, and he didn't commit because, you know, at the start, everybody was very, very worried, and rightly so, about COVID, you know. And I think he relaxed about it then when, you know, as it went on. But I actually ruptured my spleen when I was a minor. I was hand passing the ball over my head and a fella came under me and kind of hit me right in the ribs with a shoulder, or maybe more towards the stomach. And the only way I can describe it was that, you know, like the feeling of being winded, that feeling of being winded, that excruciating pain just never went away. So it was agonizing. I remember I woke up in the middle of the night just and was brought to hospital. But I remember the doctors telling me in hospital, because mine was ruptured and they were going to take it out and they wanted to give me every chance because I played football. They said, if we take this out, you can forget about playing football. And I always remember that, and it ended up healing back itself. Your spleen cleans your blood or something, I can't remember now. That's why I was really surprised to read that. I'm sorry for throwing this to you, Lee, that I wouldn't say you're an expert on spleens. You're our sports psychologist here. But yeah, this man has had no spleen since he was 18. It's phenomenal.
No, it's absolutely amazing, and maybe it is the sports psychologist that needs to be asked in this one, because, you know, it's clearly a mental thing. You know, he's got over even medical problems. I mean, that's the power of the mind right there. But I mean, that's unheard of. And then just throw in the fact, you know, that he has a heart issue as well, like just on top of that, you know, as if it's no big deal either. That's something he's obviously always had to manage, something he's always had to be really aware of. And you know, you've been in matches where you've took a really big blow or a really big hit, and there's always that, even if it is initially just getting winded, but there's that little split second you're like, oh, is this serious? You know, and you sort of have to walk it off and calm yourself again. You just wonder, I mean, would that be even worse for him? You know, would he always have that in the back of his head if he takes one really bad blow, or he's just so out of breath and he feels sick, you know, with the heart condition or something, you know, like all these mental barriers would constantly be telling him that maybe he shouldn't be there, he shouldn't be on the pitch. But he was, and you know, and he was fantastic on the pitch as well, as you say, All-Star nomination 2018. I think that was Carlo's first since 1994. Like, so, I mean, fair play to him. I talk about defying the odds.
Yeah, fantastic player, Paul Broderick. He's gone. Colin Boyle's gone. Brian Fox is gone. In Tipperary, Niall, he won the Munster final. He'd actually lost a Munster final at minor under 21 at senior, so he finally got to the promised land. Didn't retire after that, played on. Looking at Brian Fox, you wouldn't think there's an intercounty player, if we're being honest, but he brilliantly industrious half forward. And I think he was at his best under Liam Kearns when they got to the All-Ireland semi-final. He was kind of dropping back into a sweeper role that year. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. The year they had that good run.
Yeah, like industrious is definitely the word. Like he just, like he was so clever on the ball, and he'd always be kind of flying around the breaks, and he'd get the break then, and he'd give the clever pass. He was very quick, like, and a great lad to sort of break through and set up a score or something like that. Like, I'll never forget the Munster semi-final last year when in 2020, the year they won, they were really struggling against Limerick, and Brian Fox came on that day and he completely changed the game. He kicked a brilliant score off the outside of the boot and then was instrumental in winning the sideline as well. Like, Conor Sweeney scored, like, and he was good today in the Munster final too, and he got the goal. Remember the goal he scored against Mayo up in the semi-final? It was classic Brian Fox goal. He kind of just ghosted
through. Outside of the boot.
He kind of drop kicked it off the left foot and it rolled in, like, but it was the way he kind of broke past the Mayo defenders. Like, they saw him coming and there wasn't too much on, but he just stayed going and kind of eventually got by them. But that was the type of player he was, like, and we've hurled against him a few times as well, and he's a very good hurler as well for Aeroge and Acarty. And his cousin Tom Fox was on the Tipperary panel as well, like, but
handing to the great
yeah,
Pat Fox.
Yeah, they'd be related to Pat Fox. They're all from the same club, Aeroge and Acarty. I think he's a nephew now. I'm not 100% on that, but yeah, he was a very clever player and a lad. As a Tipperary supporter, he was a lad that you always wanted to see on the ball, like, because he'd do the right thing with it, like. So
yeah, no, fantastic. Yeah, three great players, all gone now after three brilliant careers. James McCartan is back. Down finally have a manager, Lee. What a manager after getting, talking about sitting around thinking they're not getting anyone, and now they have the great James McCartan. The two of you are too young to really appreciate James McCartan as much as I do. I love James McCartan because when I was a young 13-year-old falling in love with Gaelic football, James McCartan was only either 18 or 19 winning All-Ireland in 91, and this lad was magic. And he was even more magic then in 94 when he had the few more years when they won it again. He managed him 2010, got them to an All-Ireland final, beat that very good Kerry team in the quarterfinal, lost to Cork, I think only by a point, in the final. They got to a league semi-final back then, got to an Ulster final then in 2014, I think, before he left. Absolutely fantastic pedigree, respecting Down, has done it before. And like, how humble is he? He's been with the Down minors since, Lee, and now he's back with the seniors. Like, it's just selfless, you know, putting his shoulder to the wheel for the Down cause.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, and I think one of the biggest attributes that he'll have is that people will actually want to play for him. You know, yeah. Who in Down doesn't want to play for James McCartan? Like, he's got so much respect for what he did as a player and then what he did again as a manager. He's sort of going to reignite that hope, you would think. And then, you know, with, the obvious thing is that will the Kilcoo players play under him? And hopefully he would have some sort of... if I was him, that'd be one of the first things, you know, you'd be looking at, you know, trying to get these boys back on board, the Johnston brothers and whatever else. He's also got O'Rourke in as his
Aidan O'Rourke,
coach. Yeah, as his assistant coach, you know. So he hasn't announced any of his coaching staff. And I was sort of thinking, like we were talking about how Conor Laverty was maybe close to getting the job, and he's currently the Down Under 20 manager. But because he's still playing for Kilcoo and they're in Ulster and stuff, he obviously doesn't want to commit that much still yet. But maybe a job, and this is just me speculating, but maybe a job with him in the coaching staff to try and open up that bridge to the Kilcoo team. And they're obviously sort of catering for him to be a Down manager one day, you know, so it'd be getting him experience in that sense. Yeah. And then you can get everyone on board. And then under the great James McCartan, that, you know, they could really go for a rally, because Down have been in, they've been in football and wilderness, you know, since he left. I think they reached an Ulster final in 2017, but they were completely dismantled by Tyrone. And in terms of county, I'd love to know the numbers, but the turnover rate of players who show up one year and then not the next, it's just absolutely huge.
It's ridiculous. So Benny Coulter was talking about that. He was obviously talking up James McCartan. He said he's a shrewd operator. He can read a game. He's brilliant tactically, knows how to set teams up, knows how to get on with the lads. So it's a brilliant choice, Benny said. But he did go on about talk about the players. He was in with Paddy Talley, I think 2019. And he said, when I was in with Down, our four main forwards in the championship against Armagh was Conair Harrison, Pat Haveran, Donal O'Hare and Jerome Johnson. And none of them played last year. And you can throw Ryan Johnson in there as well. So there is that huge turnover that only a legend like James McCartan could probably get. Who in Down would not want to play for him? And if you don't want to play for James McCartan, who's a legendary player and who's got Down to an All-Ireland final out of nowhere in 2010 as well, What are you made of? That's the way I would be looking at them. What are you made of? And I do accept the Conor Laverty point. I think that's important. I think this management's better than Laverty and Marty Clark anyways. Much more experience. Aidan O'Rourke is a shrewd enough operator, has senior inter-county experience too. If they can't get Laverty, they should just get in the kit man for Kilcoo or the tea lady. They need to get someone from Kilcoo that everybody loves in Kilcoo. Just, I don't care if you know nothing about football. Come on in. We'll cover the football. So you do get every one of them in here.
Get a farmer from Kilcoo in.
A sheep farmer.
Sheep farmers.
They're all sheep farmers there.
Get them to drag the boys in. Oh, but even, like, I even know who about James McCartan, like, and I'm not the biggest football man, but I've seen, like, I remember watching the highlights of a game they played against Derry, and one of the points he scored, it was up online there yesterday as well, and he just ran through for about 50 yards, took about 5 hits and straight over the bar, like, and he was just... He was iconic, really, as a player, wasn't he? Kind of tenacity and skill at the same time, like, in a low centre of gravity, and just, he was kind of a little pit bull on the field, wasn't he?
Was. Like, I can use to describe him, he was magic. That's what he was. He was absolute magic. He was dynamite. There's two words, magic and dynamite. Talking about being addicted to the game here, right? So, like, I mean, James McCartan is back in. You know, and like, I mean, let's be honest, he'd be doing that as a volunteer in his own county. Like, I mean, went back to the minors volunteering and now back in again. Joe Quaid who obviously managed Kildare at Christy Ring, then managed Westmeath at the Joe McDonagh Cup. He's gone to manage the Kildare Intermediate Camogie. Like, these lads are addicted to it. You know what I mean? I can't imagine. Like, I mean, we all know managers get some payments and everything, and I'm not going to... I can't imagine the Kildare Intermediates are going to pay that much. These lads are just addicted to getting involved with teams. Like, he was involved with the Limerick Camogie team before as well. And then not only that, we see Davy Fitzgerald has gone in with the Cork Camogie team as a coach, not even as the manager. Again, addicted to it. Could there be that much money involved in that team?
Well, I don't... The Davy Fitzgerald one is not confirmed yet. It's just... I think it's just speculation.
Even or the Echo Live is reporting it.
Yeah. So, like... No, it is. Like, it's just these guys are just complete fanatics, like, aren't they? And they just... I'd say it's a bit... It reminds you a bit of Ken Hogan getting involved with the Junior Bs
addicted
in Lurley.
Addicted to
it's
it.
It's just a lad who... Like, that's just what they do. And they can't... Like, when they have a bit of spare time, it's what they want to be doing, like. And... Yeah, Joe Quay going in with the Kildare Intermediates, Dave Fitzgerald going in with the, potentially going in with the Cork Camogie team. Like, there'll be some star-studded names in the Camogie management teams next year.
Definitely. You've done a little bit of coaching, Lee, haven't you? You're over the ladies team in the club. Like, I mean, is coaching addictive? I think I did one session. I did enjoy it. I did it with Mount Mellick. They asked me, it was funny, they had gotten Tomás O'Shea down for a coaching session with Mount Mellick, and... Tomás had to let them down at the very last minute, so they got me in as a replacement. Imagine the Mount Mellick lads' heads just going off as I showed up instead of Tomás O'Shea. But anyways, I did a session with them. I did a session with their forwards, and I did really enjoy it. You know, like, I mean, it must be addictive.
Yeah, to be honest, I absolutely love it. Like, it's really, really enjoyable, and it has me out, or it had me out 6 nights a week, because you're training twice playing for the men's team, and then you've got a match, and you're training the ladies twice, and then they've got a match. So it is 6 nights a week. But I found each one sort of a break from the other, and something like what we talked about with the dual players. So one day I'm coaching, one day I'm playing. There's a little bit of arrogance in any coach, in the sense that, like, how many times have we been coached, or you've been in a training session, or you've been managed by someone, or they pick a team and you're like, what are they doing picking that team? What are you doing this drill? You know, and then finally you're in a position where you pick the drill.
Because I'd love that control, like, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. You have to be a little bit of a control freak to enjoy that element of it too. And then there's no better feeling than winning as well. Like, the ladies hadn't won a game all last season, and we were third in the league this season. We won the C Junior Championship this year. Only lost to two teams the entire season as well. Like, you know, so it was really, really, really brilliant watching them, like, develop and learn. And as the season went on, we just got better and better. And the buy-in was brilliant as well. Our biggest issue was that the matches were on a Saturday night and trying to get them out on Saturday nights. But other than that, I can see why it's addictive. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm going to do it next year as well.
Getting a group of players to buy into your ideas, getting them really fit, getting them playing the way you want them to play, seeing them express themselves, seeing them put their heart and souls into it, and then seeing them winning. I imagine that's like a drug. Seriously, like, I mean, I'm not kind of trying to think. It must be an incredible feeling that you, I know it's not all about the manager, but you got these team together. You've let them express themselves, given them what they need, and they've ended up winning. I'd imagine that's like a drug.
I'd say it must be. Like, I haven't done too much coaching.
Me neither, no.
Myself, to be honest. Like, we're being encouraged to get involved. Like, nowadays, a lot of clubs have it that their senior players are coaching the under-8s and the under-10s and the under-12s. And I suppose that's where you start off. And any of the lads I've talked to, like, a few of the lads won championships with under-14 teams, and they did say, like, it was as good a buzz they had when they're winning themselves. Like, and a lot of managers have said that in the past as well. So, no, it's definitely a great thing to get involved in. And I'd say if you did get involved, it would be easy to become addicted to it. Like,
yeah, I remember Portlaoise trying to get some, lads involved. It's a very hard thing to do when you're still playing, because you don't really have the time. A lot of your time's taken up. I remember saying to them, here, I'm getting the head boxed off myself winning county titles. Like, I mean, is that not enough? Is that not enough for this club? So I actually didn't go back. I was living in Dublin. I didn't train any of the underage teams in Portlaoise. I'll do that kind of thing maybe when Mannix and Ari are old enough. That kind of selfish volunteering, you know, that kind of way where you're actually spending time with the children. So we know what next season's going to look like, Lee. The Examiner said that they've seen it. I don't think it's official yet, but they've definitely, John Fogarty has definitely seen it. So the league is starting the end of January. for the football first week in February. For the hurling, the provincial championships are starting April 16th and 17th. The football provincial final is May the 28th, 29th. And the hurling provincial finals are the 4th and 5th of June. And most of us know at this stage that the All-Ireland final in hurling is the 17th of July and football is the 24th of July. So it's over with a week still to go. So I'd imagine with that week taken into consideration, every county in Ireland should be starting club championships on the 1st of August. Won't that be fantastic?
Yeah, that would be absolutely amazing, to be honest. I mean, our championship got at the end of August, start of September. We got to the semi-finals, so it took us right into the November, end of October even. But like, it's a long season, and then playing it in the cold and in the dark as well. You know, championships for summer, and that's for the county and that's for the club as well. So if we were able to start in August, I just think that'd be fantastic. Like, it would be really, really enjoyable. I think they've cut it down from, you know, typically it would have been a 36-week season, and now it's cut all the way down to 25.
Yeah.
So that's a fair chunk off it. You know, they've done a good job in condensing it. And I don't want to bring up Proposal B or start any rows in that sense, but in the same week that this plan has all came out and what the future holds, three players have announced their retirement. And you just sort of wonder, you know, if a different proposal and that's it condensed as well. Like, you know, we've got a big thing already, plus with that, but you're wondering if something like Proposal B had come in, would players have hung on, and the countless other sort of inter-county players like the Kilcoo boys and whatever else, you know, if they'd be far more interested in joining the county setup.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Like, if we're being honest, like, I mean, and I was all for Proposal B. What we have here now, starting at the start of February, running right through to July, no more that April for clubs thing thrown right in the middle, a fairly intense league championship, games most weekends. It's a hell of a lot better than what we had in previous years, where it's dragged out till September and it's dragging on too long. Like, I mean, I don't have a huge problem. This year, obviously, there is a little bit of messing going on. So say the weekend, February the 12th, 13th, you have the All-Ireland Club Finals. You have a full round of National Hurling League, and you have the Sigerson Cup semi-finals. And that's the messing that we don't like. Now, it has to be said that at the end of this year, the club championship will go right until All-Ireland semi-final stage before Christmas, and then the finals will be played the following February. So I'm sure they'll be able to find a weekend in February where there is no hurling and football, you know, National League, and give the All-Ireland Club Finals their... I hate the All-Ireland Club Finals on when there's National League, you know, National League on. Mm. It runs down the prestige of those competitions, and the poor Sigerson Cup semi-finals will be a complete afterthought as well. So obviously, because this year... you know, with the follow over from the club last year can't be finished. Obviously, this year the semi finals have to be played, so there is that little bit of messing. But the year after, it should be a little bit less hectic at that time of the year. Like we said, that these pre season competitions are being played this year, so teams are back training on the 8th of December. The pre-seasons are back in January. I think it's a knockout. I was saying it's no big deal, and then I was saying, oh well, you know, it is no big deal, but at the same time, there are national competitions that have national media added, and you can't just go to it like a challenge game where you play, you know, 1:15 in one half and another 15, you know, you don't do it at your own leisure. But it was interesting that all of the FBD league competition matches are being played in this air dome at the Connacht GAA Centre of Excellence. Like, I mean, and they're very lucky. Imagine the luck at that time of the year and the shit that the pitches are in, that you just walk into a dome and play on the AstroTurf. Now, this is an AstroTurf like a lot of people will remember from five-a-side, where the, you know, the whole leg could be scalded off you if you go in for a sliding tackle. This is proper, you know, grass. It's moved on. I'd be really looking forward to seeing games there.
It gives us a reason to look forward to the FBD League, doesn't it? Just
get a look at it, yeah. And supporters can go in there too. Apparently there's a temporary stand can go one side and fit 2,000, which is all would be at those FBD games anyways. I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
I'd say there'll probably be more of a crowd looking to go this year just to get into the dome. And like, there will be a bit of a novelty there just to see like what it's like watching a Gaelic football game inside, like, you know, and... I know, like the roof is meant to be very high, isn't it? You said it was
twice the height of the goal of the top of the goalpost. That's at the middle. It's obviously a dome, so it wouldn't be that at the sides. But the centerpiece, which you know would run down the middle of the pitch, would be twice the height of the goals.
Yeah, I'm just trying to imagine a game of hurling being played in there, and like the ball hitting the dome, because like the ball at different stages it will go up very high, like so.
Yeah, I'd rebound back. It's like when you're playing the indoor soccer where you do a rebound off the side wall to get past. You could rebound it off the roof. Would there be no hurling there? You couldn't play hurling unless they'd have to make it double the side. I don't think Mayo people would be too. Although it's in Ballyhaunis, which is a proud hurling place, but they've no. It's the Mayo Centre of Excellence. It's nothing to do with Ballyhaunis, but it'd be interesting to keep your eye out. I think it's Leitrim against Sligo is the first game there on Tuesday, January the 4th in the Dome. It's Andy Moran's first game with Leitrim, so I'm sure there'll be a bit of national attention on that one. See, that's the thing. There'll be loads of national media up watching Andy Moran's first game with Leitrim. Say Leitrim get hammered against Sligo. Oh, you know, even though it's just the pre-season, it's national exposure. Where if Andy Moran organises a challenge game against Sligo, and they get hammered by Sligo, nobody's any the wiser. You know, Andy Moran will put it down to the players. Look, we're trying everybody out. It's no big deal to the league. You know, it's the January competitions are that extra little bit of competition that I don't think is needed in January when you're in that pre-season kind of mode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there'll be a lot of media coverage just given the fact that he's Andy Moran. And so, you know, all eyes are sort of on him anyway. But I know what you mean. This competition is just... It's brought the pressure that little bit earlier. And like, and you were saying at the start, oh, it's, you know, the preseason tournaments, it's no big deal. But then because it's no big, like the fact that it's no big deal is sort of a reason not to do it. You know what I mean? Like any team that's won it and any of the experiences I've had from watching it, they've never really went on to do anything hugely spectacular. You know, it doesn't really tell you anything about the season ahead. And then like, if we even look back at like, all the debates around Congress when they were talking about Proposal B and everything, like most of the counties were saying, you know, that were against it, they were saying that, sure, the league, we treat that as like a warm-up, you know, especially the first few games anyway. And so if that's the case, then why do you really need these high-pressured pre-season games anyway, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just kind of use the first few league games for a little bit of experimenting and then crank it up towards the end of the league, you know, almost at championship pace for the last two games and then get into the championship. I initially said I don't really mind those early season competitions in January. I've completely talked myself out of wanting them now. I don't want them at all. Not to the point where I'm going to start going mad about it, you know, but you just prefer if they hadn't come back in. Last one here before we get into Conor McManus, is Rory Grugan. So he was tweeting about this. So he's bringing a motion to the Armagh County Convention to move all club league games to either Friday or Saturday night for the 22 season and beyond. So like, I mean, the three of us play, and this is a situation where people who haven't played will think, Jesus, there's more important things to be thinking of than this. And then every player will go, that makes so much sense, because there's nothing worse than waiting around till the Sunday evening. Sometimes it's Sunday evening until you play your league game. And like, I mean, you can't go out. You can't really, you know, you can't really do anything, especially when you're in your 20s. Like, a social life in Ireland is a really important thing. Like, I mean, that's what young people do at the weekend. And to miss out on it for league games, club games, it's just cruel. Like, you're looking at gigs, festivals, 21st parties, you know, birthday parties, stag parties. When you're in your 20s, stag parties are huge. When you get to my age, you don't really particularly want to go on them. You know, but like, I mean, it's just such a simple thing, Niall. But players would appreciate it, you know, massively.
Yeah, because to be waiting around for, like, you wouldn't mind a championship game of a Sunday. Like, you'd be buzzing to be playing of a Sunday for a championship. But when it's a league game, like, to be kind of, because when you do have a game, your whole weekend is kind of boxed off towards the game.
Socialising,
like,
you know, wise.
Yeah, like you're not going to be going out Saturday night. You're going to be kind of taking it easy Saturday. And to be waiting around if it's like a Sunday evening league game, it's the worst thing in the world. A lot of them would be Sunday morning, but I think everyone in Armagh, they'd be eager that motion passes, because a Friday or Saturday game is much more enjoyable. You play your game, you're with the team, you probably go out with your team and
together,
a bit of bonding, you know, early on in the season. And that's exactly what the majority of players want. Like, so it'd be great if it was passed. And I think it probably should be the way in most counties around Ireland that league games are Fridays and Saturdays, because Sunday, a lot of the time you'd be in the winter months, you'd rather not be playing a game of hurling or football anyway.
Yeah, a lot of league games in the Leash are midweek. They're like Wednesday or Thursday night. I saw they're in Down. They play all their club league games on Friday nights. And in Tyrone, they moved in 2021 to do the same thing. Lee, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. And Down, they've been doing the Friday nights thing now for a couple of years, to be fair. So they're leading the trend in that sense. It's really good from my point of view anyway. I have my weekends to myself. We would train on a Monday and a Wednesday, and then you play your match on a Friday. You've got your Saturday and you've got your Sunday. Like, you know,
great.
It's perfect, really. Like, you can plan lots of things around that. Like I already mentioned, taking the girls, they play on a Saturday. I mean, that's they play on a Saturday every Saturday, 7 p.m. You know, you couldn't think of a worse time on a Saturday. Like, you know, in the amount of, like, you're missing big players and games because, well, hen parties for one. I've been completely indifferent to hen parties, but now I hate them. I absolutely, there's so many of them. But like, you know, weddings are on a Saturday. Like you said, birthday parties are on a Saturday night. And you know, and they have to plan everything around that. And quite often, like, sure, they don't even have a changing room to get changed afterwards and try to rush to the event late, like, you know. So it definitely helps having the Friday nights. It's a big, big change. Tyrone, they pushed that through, and I think that's sort of Armagh are looking at, you know, them as an example. Ashley McConville came out in he's a Sunday Life column, and he did a big spiel about how things just need to change now, and the traditionalists need to get over it, and that really, you know, football is for, it's for young people primarily, you know, and if they're playing it, and a Friday or a Saturday afternoon would suit them so much better.
Yeah, no, it definitely would. And like, I mean, there's one, like Rory Grugan was saying that Saturday night is their preference, actually, would you believe, Lee, because he's saying that he wants to avoid managers who would train every Sunday morning if you have a league game Friday night. And that probably would happen. Like, there's a solution here to that. Just don't go on the Sunday morning is number one. That would be my reaction to it. But then again, I was a top level player who was always going to be picked, you know, like, I mean, every player can't take my stand. I'm only messing it. But the only thing is, they would, because obviously managers get paid by sessions. Obviously outside managers get paid. Generally managers from their own club wouldn't be getting paid. But like, I mean, if you're getting paid 100 quid, 80 quid, 120 quid per session, you could guarantee if you have a league game on the Friday night, these lads are dying to see, where can I fit in another session during the week?
Yeah, there'd be lads stumbling into the training session. Like, I'd say you'd stay in if you had a match. If you're training, you'd probably chance
it.
Yeah,
you're allowed to show up to train and die in, really.
You'd set the alarm, you'd be like, hopefully it wakes me now. But I seen in the comments under Rory Grugan's tweet, there was an Armagh ladies footballer, and she was saying that, well, we play all our league games on the Saturday, and we've all the pitches and the referees. Like, we don't want to lose our Saturday slot. So it'd be interesting to see how that one works out.
Yeah, like, there could be some crossover there then. All right, there's no doubt about that. Maybe don't go. Maybe, like, I mean, that's the solution here. But there definitely, if there's a Friday night league game, an awful lot of managers 100% would have it on Sunday morning. But anyways, once there isn't a match on Sunday, do what you want, lads. Do what you want. Just don't get caught. That's the only that's the only advice I give. Right, I'm talking nonsense now. We'll leave it there, and we'll come back with Conor McManus. So we haven't spoken to Conor McManus in ages on the show, and thanks to our friends in Imagine Broadband, I was speaking to him yesterday, and I started off by asking him how the downtime feels in November.
We're only 12 or 14 days away from inter-county training returning, so take the wee break when it's going.
So you've had a break since the 17th of October. I was looking, you lost to True. It's a club I'd never heard of until this year. Where the hell did they come from? It was the quarter final of the Monaghan Championship. So you've already had a month off.
Yeah, well, funny, we played the league final there on Friday. The senior league final was on Friday, so
right.
We went right onto that. Just the way the league structure around here in Monaghan, the league's actually not finished before the championship, which is a strange enough one. But we finished up in the league final there on Friday, so that's us done and dusted now for the year.
Right, done and dusted until the 8th of feckin' December, which they've changed now. It was supposed to be the 1st of January, and they've changed that now. So there's no, like, it's running into each other just like it always has.
Yeah, there's no real change to that at all in any way, shape or form. However long that lasts, I suppose we'll get a better steer or a better feel for how this closed season, or, you know, the split season works. We'll get a better feel for that I suppose next year when we've had a full clear run at it, you know, the county season finishes in June or July, I think it is next year.
July, yeah.
So I suppose we get a better taste of what split season looks like next year. This year probably wasn't the best year with COVID and everything else. So we get a better feel for that now next year.
Yeah, I think the whole idea of getting rid of the, you know, the pre-season competitions in January lets you start on the 1st of January, because we were talking on the show here today about, you know, challenge matches versus, you know, I know they're not the most important matches in the world, but they're still national competition and there's national media at them. Whereas a challenge match, you could play half a team in one half, change it completely. You can organise it whenever you kind of suits your players. You know, there is a big difference. It's not really like challenge matches would make your life easier, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
They probably would. Yeah, they probably would. Funny, I was just on saying there that this morning about the McKenna Cup, and I was actually just lamenting that it wasn't happening. Not that I'm a big pro McKenna Cup, but I suppose it just gives you a definite structure. You know, every player knows that you're playing a game Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, or Wednesday, Sunday, Sunday, whatever way it is. Whereas challenge games, they can be stuck in anywhere between here and you know mid January. You could be playing them midweek. You could be pulled and dragged anywhere, just depending on who you're playing or where it is or when it is. But I suppose, look, at the end of the day, it gives fellas, it's particularly young lads, I suppose, trying to break into teams and that there. It's a recognised game. There's not going to be massive pressure on it. It's a wee bit more than a challenge game. So yeah, it might just give them that wee bit more, anybody that's looking to get game time or get their fitness back or whatever the case
yeah.
is.
It's them I feel sorry for, the poor chaps getting their chance, because their Christmas is ruined. You'll be all right. You can have your, you can enjoy, you're established at this stage, but they actually have to, pretty much be very dedicated over Christmas, because this is their one shot.
This is it, yeah. I remember being back there myself, like, yeah, the morning. So it is, you know, you can't just go off the rails completely over Christmas, you know. So not that most county players are doing that now, they're keeping themselves in good shape and all the rest anyway. But they're back, I suppose. What you were saying there was the idea of them not being there was that the league would start earlier. The league started at the same time it always started, in the last week in January. So far, no major changes. It's obviously going to be, we'll see the changes at the end of the league and how quickly the championship starts. Then I suppose that's ultimately where we'll find the real difference.
Yeah, the April for clubs will be gone and we'll just get straight into the championship. It's probably what the biggest change we'll notice from the last few years.
And April for clubs was a mess anyway. Sticking in five or six games in the month of April, and then you had county players being expected to play all them games, you had club players who were playing them four or five games, and then they weren't playing a game for God knows how long thereafter. So that certainly wasn't the answer anyway.
No, it definitely didn't make sense. So how are you managing the hips? Your hips are in bad shape from all accounts. You're 34 now, just gone 34. So
no,
like,
not
I mean,
yet, not yet. Not yet. I'm hanging on.
Wikipedia is wrong then. It said 7th of November.
No. Next week. Next Tuesday, is it? What day is it? 30th. Wikipedia is wrong. 30th.
Right.
Don't believe all you're reading Wikipedia.
So how are the hips? How are you managing them? I presume this time of the year is grand and easy on them, whereas, like, say, the Armagh game and the championship, like I say, that was just cruel.
Yeah. Well, funny, it's actually in a weird sort of way. At that stage in the year, you have actually most of your work done. You've all the work done. So that bit's actually the easy bit. It's the tougher part of it is actually now, whereby, you know, the temptation is, you know, there's nothing happening, not do as much, but you need to be doing as much, if not more now.
Right.
It's actually, the less you do on the hip sometimes, the worse it gets, you know, whereas now, I'm not saying the more you do, because you have to manage your load more and pick your fights and pick your battles, I suppose, a wee bit more than you did in the past. But if you totally ignore them and just down tunes altogether, that's probably when you're going to be at your sorest with them, you know. So it's just a matter of keeping things ticking over with them, keeping the rehab going. And then when you get back on the field, there's obviously certain elements of training that you just aren't going to be beneficial to you, because they're going to do more harm than good. So you just have to be mindful of that and pick your battles.
What, like the long runs or that kind of thing, the heavy slogging?
Long runs are fine. It's actually the shorter, sharper twisting and turning, that sort of stuff, is what will cause you more trouble, you know. So you just have to manage that as best you can.
That's not ideal for an inside forward like yourself, who, you know, needs to be twisted. That's the whole part of your game,
that's,
I suppose.
That's your whole part of your game, yeah. And I suppose that, again, it's just trying to do that when you really need it, I suppose, is the key, you know.
Right, right. It is noticeable, like last year, that you're kind of carrying them late in games. You know, it's noticeable that you're not running as free as you would have.
Yeah, well, it's just, I suppose, look, it is what it is. You know what I mean? That it's been there a long time, you know. So it's you're just trying to. Funny, I don't notice it really in games. Maybe it's just I'm not playing that well. I don't know. you don't really notice it. You know, during games, you don't notice it. It's the before and after more so that you find the issues with it. You know,
is it like you're floating out the field a little bit more than usual? Would that be tied into that, or is that just to free you up a little bit more?
No, it's not tied into that at all. No, it's not tied into that at all. I think it was just about, you know, different men and different options just getting involved in the play a wee bit more maybe. But no, it's nothing to do with hips or anything else like that.
Have you noticed the game? Obviously that Armagh game, that was the game of the championship. Like, I mean, what a bloody game. Like, it just, you know, it was an incredible game to watch. Have you noticed, obviously a lot of your career on the inside line has been very defensive, you know, double sweeper watching you at all times kind of stuff. Have you noticed a bit more freedom now and a little bit, there is definitely more direct ball going in?
Yeah, like that game was a crazy game, you know what I mean? Definitely, I don't think you could analyse Gaelic football on that one game anyway and say that it has changed.
Yeah, Jim McGuinness wasn't happy about it now.
Yeah, to watch it from a neutral's point of view, it probably was a great game. And you know, I think Week 1 had four goals scored in the first 20 minutes and had conceded probably 10 or 12 points in that period of time, you know, so... It was definitely an anomaly, all right. But it, you know, you wouldn't get that game 3 or 4 years ago. So there is a bit of a shift on in terms of how teams are setting up, and there's more probably of an emphasis on attacking than defending. You know,
something that, and it's just noticeable from watching the three games, the club games on the television. I don't know how much football you watch in the off season, or do you try to get away with it, or get away from it. But we were talking about this on the show, that the club game's very slow with their build ups. Like, I mean, it seems to be a stalemate one side and a stalemate the other side. Whereas if every team is pushing up on the kickouts, if you move the ball down really fast, you probably notice this better than anybody. If you move the ball down maybe three kick passes, suddenly you have a one-on-one. But if you're really slow with the build-up, you're going to have the stalemate.
Yeah, but I think the club game in general, you know, and you can see it probably even in Monaghan, it's not as good to watch as it maybe had been. We were involved in one or two of them type of games this year in the championship. And if you watch some of the games on TV over the last number of weeks, you know, you're seeing very low scoring. You know, even the Dublin final there at the weekend, you know, low scoring, loads of quality players on both teams, but it's just how club teams and how club managers are setting teams up to play now. So I'd say the club game is probably behind the inter-county game in where it's gone. You know, it's probably 2 or 3 or 4 years behind the inter-county game in evolving and getting back to a more attacking style of play. So hopefully in time that will weed itself out too.
Yeah, I suppose the time of the year doesn't help it either. You know, it's very hard to get away from fellas, and the fast players, you know, become slower, you know, that kind of a way. And then you're probably working with less skilled players too. And I don't know, it probably needs, like you say, 2 or 3 years of watching inter-county teams do it right, and then it'll filter down.
Yeah, but ultimately that's where it all came from, is watching inter-county teams, you know, because the club managers all watched, you know, a lot of the defensive stuff that was happening for a long time there as well, and then they brought that back and set it up. And it's a very difficult system to play, and you need, you know, players to be very, very fit, you know, to do it to the correct, you know, the way it's supposed to be done, you know. So when you have possibly club teams that aren't as technically gifted or as naturally fit, it becomes a very, very poor game to watch them, you know?
Yeah, geez, it does. Yeah, the three, we were very unlucky with the three that were on television last weekend anyways. Come here, how are you feeling in Monaghan? Like, I mean, I suppose you redeemed yourself this year You know, could easily have beaten Tyrone that day. Probably, a lot of people probably say you should have. You were back level after 49 minutes. You were coming off two terrible years, really, from a Monaghan point of view. You've kind of, you know, given yourself, you know, put yourself back into the frame, I suppose.
Yeah, I love it. We had a couple of poor years there in 19 and 20. So this year was very much about trying to right a few wrongs. Now, we didn't ultimately do that because we started off at the start of the year. We wanted to win an Ulster Championship and we came up short. You know, and it's definitely, it was a big opportunity to get to an All-Ireland semi-final again because obviously there's no back doors and no Super 8s and all the rest. So it was very much an open opportunity to get to an All-Ireland semi-final and get a rattle at obviously at Kerry. So we didn't do that and we'd be disappointed with that, you know.
Yeah, no, well, that's true. And like, I mean, I suppose it's hard to, have you talked about that first half in that match and how, you know, you had such a slow start. Like, have you discussed it as a group or what happened? Or
not yet. Like, you know yourself, when it's all over, it's all over.
Yeah.
But like, it is something we will sit down and look at because if we're going to improve next year and try and build on where we were this year, we're going to have to, and as painful as it probably will be, we're going to have to sit down and take a look at it, you know.
Yeah.
As poor and all as we were that day in the first half, we still missed four or five chances that you know, 9 times out of 10 we would put away. So it would have just kept us in touching distance and within striking distance of Tyrone, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose seeing them go the whole way, like, I mean, what do you think when you see that? Nobody expected them to do it at the time. You know, nobody was saying, here's the, you know, potential All-Ireland final, because Tyrone were an unknown quantity a little bit, and you were coming off two, you know, not brilliant years, and then they go on and win it. So yeah. I suppose it must boost your confidence.
Well, look at it, I suppose, and I think I said this earlier on, whereby the last 6 or 7 years, you've been watching teams run into Dublin and just fall, you know, and every team in the country was doing it, you know, so we were no different than anybody else. And you were watching on teams trying to beat them and nobody could beat them. Now that somebody did go and beat them and you have a new All-Ireland champion and could have been one of three teams that won it ultimately because Mayo beat Dublin and then you had Kerry and Tyrone on the other side. So any one of them three teams could have went on and won the All-Ireland and it definitely opens things up and gives teams a wee bit more hope, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. Like, I suppose Dublin will be licking their wounds and they'll be back.
There's no doubt Dublin will be back. There's no doubt. Like, but the teams will have gained a wee bit of confidence from this year alone, you know.
Yeah, no, they definitely will. Come here, we were going to change the whole championship there. Plan B was going to come in. Monaghan were very much against it. I know Darren Hughes went on the record that he was against it. Where did you kind of sit on the whole thing?
I felt that it needed change, definitely. We needed change. Whether that was the right thing to do or not, I'm not entirely sure. Something I definitely feel that we got out of this was that there's a massive appetite for change. You know, biggest problem with the GAA is how long it'll take to get that or how long it'll take to put something back in place that we can actually move forward with and actually change, you know, and the length of time it took us to get to this point. And we didn't go ahead with it, that would be the worry. You know, how long it took us to get to that stage again. But yeah, there's definitely, I think, change needed in some way, shape or form. Again, yeah, that was the right thing, I'm not entirely sure. But look, there's loads of things within the GAA that need changing at the minute. You know, I think one thing that's gathering a wee bit of traction there at the minute is minors and under 17s and that there, it seems to me.
Well, your tweet definitely got it, kicked it off anyways.
I didn't expect it to go as mad as it did. But funny, I was at a club minor final with our boys there the day of that, and they were beaten in maybe after extra time, but they were beaten by a point anyway. But I was just looking at them lads, and there's 3 or 4 real good footballers in that group, you know. But they're still only under 17 and they're expected to come in now and play senior football with us next year. And it's not fair to ask them to do that. They should be getting ready for another year of minor football at their own grade and developing at their own level and at their own pace and at their own age group, you know. So we're definitely missing a trick there.
But I suppose if there was a minor and they were really good 17-year-olds, they probably would play senior anyways for the club. They might double up. I think that I'm trying to understand the whole thing. I prefer it to go back without having thought about it too much. But I think what they're trying to do is separate the underage from the adults so that there's no crossover. And
I think that's very simple. You just, as long as your team is in the minor championship, you don't play senior football.
Right.
And if your team is knocked out of the minor championship or your minors is over, well, then you're free. If you're good enough, you're free to play senior football thereafter. You know, and because we're definitely losing a lot of players. Like, there's a lot of players that, like, I know in our club, like, there's not many lads that have played minor football and played senior football in the same year. You know, you could count on one hand the amount of guys that have done it in the last 20 years. Like, so you're asking young lads to come out and do that now as a norm, which is not really fair, you know.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think, is it Pat McEnany's club, Carduff, is bringing a motion to Congress in February to try and... So it seems to have a lot of support anyways. I think people like this. The funny thing about this under 17 and under 20 is I don't remember anybody ever asking for this.
No.
This was just...
the powers that be just pulled this out of the sky and just ran with it. And it has taken till now for people to just stand up and say, you know, this is not a good idea. Like, you're actively losing players at that level year on year this last 2 or 3 years. Like,
yeah, no, exactly. Eric, before we go, I'm always going on about this time of the year, Conor. I love it. I love the provincial club championships. I love seeing who the county champions are in each county and, you know, pitting them against each other. Mm. Like, I don't know, we're talking about, would you like to see a Sunday game and make more out of these competitions? You know, maybe not the county finals because they're more localised, but when it gets into the provincial, where it's still Monaghan versus Derry, or, you know, that's what it is this weekend. You can bring that kind of inter-county rivalry into it.
Oh, definitely. Like, I think the Ulster Club Championship, and you'd probably say the same about the Leinster Club Championship because you've been involved in it in the past. Yeah. One of the best competitions there is. You know, like, you're taking your county championship and you're going to Celtic Park, or you're going to Newry, or you're going to Armagh with it, or wherever it is, and you're basically going to win an Armagh championship if you're going down to play the Armagh champions, or you're going to play the Tyrone champions. You're going basically to win a Tyrone championship. That's essentially what you're going to do, and is beating the champions of that county. So, and then you're bringing your whole community with you on that journey. So it's definitely something I think we could make it more of.
Yeah, no, we'll agree on that one. Come here, listen, I've taken up enough of your time. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Good man, no bother, Willie.
Yeah, great stuff from Conor there. Right, that's all we've time for today. We'll be back on Monday. We'll review the two county finals anyways, and all the matches on telly, and anything interesting from the provincial games as well. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fellow's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wouldn't be asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Cuffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."